Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We're setting up for our next guest, Beth Finke, author of, it just came out.
Yes.
Writing Out Loud on Golden Apple Press. And you brought in one of the subjects in the book. We're going to get her set up here in a minute, Wanda Bridgeforth. Wanda has quite a story.
Yes.
Actually, both of you have quite the stories. So, Beth, talk about in your own words how Writing Out Loud came together, and then we'll get into your history.
Okay. How Writing Out Loud, this book specifically, came together is after I was leading these memoir writing classes for older adults in Chicago for a while, I realized that I was learning so much from the people that were writing their stories every week and reading them out loud in class that they all deserved a book, frankly. So I wanted to put together their stories along with my story about learning how to lead these classes without being able to see what I was doing and kind of weave it in and out and in and out and get them some attention that they deserve.
And when did you start with the class? Now, that's your dog.
That's my dog.
And the dog's microphone shy, just like the host.
Yeah.
What is the dog okay?
Yeah, I took her harness. For those of you out in Radio Land, in class, Wanda, who sits next to me in class around a table, and Whitney, I take her harness off, and Whitney plays with Wanda during the class so she doesn't get bored underneath. In class a few times, Whitney is my seeing eye dog.
Yeah.
One time, a couple times, she chews through her leash.
Oh, really?
While I'm listening very intently to the writers in my classes, and then I go to pick up the leash, and it comes off in my hand because she's been going. We've learned to just let her be a little loose on this.
And what kind of dog is Whitney?
Is a cross between a golden retriever and a yellow lab.
So you is blind the right term?
Yes. For me, yeah.
I read bits and pieces of books, but mm-hmm. It kind of in the mid-80s. Tell us how you lost your sight.
I lost my sight when I was 26 years old. Due to an unusual disease called retinopathy that affected the small blood vessels in my eyes. And so I started seeing spots. I had just gotten married, and I'm still married to Michael Konezovich.
Uh-huh.
We were on our honeymoon, and I started seeing spots. And so when we came back, I came to Chicago to see specialists here and was diagnosed and had a lot of laser treatments and had a lot of full-blown painful surgeries, but by the next year, almost to the day of our wedding, they said there was nothing else they could do. The surgeries work in about 80% of the people that have them, but somebody's the 20%. That's one thing I learned from that. So.
And were you writing before that?
I got a degree in journalism. I was one of the people that went to school after Watergate. I mean, and
yeah,
I
so was
to
I,
be,
actually. Yeah.
I wanted to
and
be.
And look at me now.
Yeah, I know. Here we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
By my senior year, I realized I didn't want to. Well, I thought I don't want to pester anybody. I say bug, but that's a bad word to use when you're talking about Watergate. Silly enough to realize you can still be a journalist but not be, there are a lot of people that want to be written about. But anyway, I gave up that idea, and I was working down at University of Illinois in Champaign, and I was the assistant director of the study abroad office down there. So I was working with students encouraging to study overseas, but I lost my sight 5 years before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed, and so I lost my job.
1985, you have here in the chapter, of course, it was illegal. The American with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how you lost your job.
So I came back to work. The job I had, I was on the phone a lot. I talked to students and asked them what they wanted to study and where they wanted to go. And if University of Illinois didn't have a program, I'd get on the phone and call, say, Loyola up here, because they have a great program in Rome. And so if I had people that wanted to go to Rome, I'd talk to the people up here. Can we get the credits transferred because it's work? And I would figure that all out and talk to the students to do that. So it really was a good job for someone who was blind. And initially, my boss was, she didn't tell me that she had plans to terminate my contracts, but she kept putting me off. When I came back, she said, well, we're going to move offices, so why don't you wait until we move the offices so you can learn that one better. So I waited. And then while I was waiting, I took a class in a graduate school there, and I was taken out of class once to go to the administration building to see about paying. And when I went there, I said, well, I'm on staff, so I don't have to pay tuition. They said, oh, no, your contract's been terminated. You are not on staff. So that's how I found out.
You bring up in the book here, employers are so leery of lawsuits down the line that they craft job descriptions with ways to avoid hiring us at all.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Journalistically, two things in what we both do. After you lost your sight, how did that affect you as a writer?
Yeah.
And let's do that first.
How did my sight loss affect me as a writer? I like to think it affected me in a very good way.
Mm-hmm.
It made me listen more. It made me ask more questions. And then when I started writing, I had enough confidence in my writing that I thought I can do something clever with this where I'm never ever describing what somebody looks like, but I can describe them by what they say, how they sound, what they do. And I believed it worked. Early on, I was doing a lot of profiles where there was a photograph of the person I was profiling. So I would tape record that interview and I have a computer that talks. I don't dictate to it, but I type into it and it parrots what I'm typing so I could listen to what I was doing. But I'd had a couple editors that said that I had to put some visuals in, and I did want to make some kind of money. And so I did that, but I got around it over and over. I interviewed the highest ranking female general of the Army at the time. I was supposed to say something about what she looked like. So I called her secretary, who I hadn't up to that point said anything that I was blind, but I had to admit to her, and I told her what I just told you all. And the secretary said, well, I got to get it right. She said, so I said, well, so what does General Vault look like? She said, well, she's 5'2", but she thinks she's 6'1". And so I asked her if I could quote that, and I put it in. And then there's a photograph of her. And I thought, I do that kind of stuff, and it's like a puzzle, but I like figuring it out, and I think it's fun.
Then the part two of what you and I both do, perhaps there's listeners out there, what was the importance? I know you've done radio. Mm-hmm. And so what was it like to get involved in radio after you were blind?
It was fabulous.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I did where I was on this. I could be an audience member, too. I could listen to it when it came on. I used to do a lot of personal essays for WBZ and National Public Radio. I did a few for Morning Edition. So you'd tape them, and then you'd know when they were going to be on. So unlike the things I did for written publications where I couldn't really read it or see it when it came out, radio, I could hear it, and it was great, and I still listen to a lot of radio.
Did that improve your skills as a listener? Here in the book, and again, in that same chapter, you talk about the lilt of her voice over the phone tells me she smiles. Were you able to tone into voices?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, and yes. And I was told when I would record, and I'm doing it now, but I'm having a good time, so it's easy, but to smile, even if you're saying something sad, smile while you're talking, because that comes through on the radio, that it's just there's more energy in a smile.
Yeah. So. Wally Phillips used to say that.
Oh, really?
Phillips said people can hear you smile or something like that.
Right?
Yeah,
huh.
Right. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Funny.
So tell us about the Lissigor piece you won for the White Sox.
Oh, the Lissigor piece.
Yeah.
You
were the only blind, I have in my notes, the
yes.
only blind woman in America to be honored for sports broadcasting.
That's right. Uh-huh. Well, I say that, and nobody said, oh, no, I have an aunt in New Jersey that won as blind and won uh-huh. an award for sports broadcasting. I was working with WBEZ, and I had a chance to go with a bunch of blind kids. Every year, there's a camp for kids in Chicago. Well, there's a camp for kids all through Illinois. They come to Chicago. They stay for 2 weeks in Chicago because now that children go to average schools, they don't go to schools for the blind anymore, they don't really meet other blind kids. So this is a pretty terrific program for junior high school kids and high school kids who are visually impaired or blind. They go on field trips every afternoon. They asked me to come over there, and they also have people come in who are blind, adults who are blind and have a job. So I would go there every year and talk about being a writer and as an option for them. I said I would do that. I just do that as a volunteer, but I wanted to go on the day that they were going to White Sox Park. I married a White Sox fan. I was not a big baseball fan, but I learned to love it because who can argue with sitting outside and eating a hot dog and having a beer? I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
So I became a White Sox fan, so I wanted to go there. I was part of the tour. We got to run the bases. We got to feel how high the pitching mound was. They actually pitched to us, and we swung a bat. So we would swing, and then they would pitch right to our swing so we could hit it and run. And when I ran to first base, there were people at first base going, come here, come. And so you just run there. So we recorded with Matt Cunningham and Kay Cahan, we recorded that piece, and WEZ didn't have a whole lot of sports stories, so when it came to that sports broadcasting category, they nominated that piece. They sent that piece in, and we won. So Kay Cahan, who told me she throws out the sports section when she reads the paper. Yeah. She's a producer over there. Matt Cunningham, who said he throws like a girl, and me, who can't see what I'm doing, the three of us won.
And what year was that?
1985. Is that right? No. 1990. I don't remember. It was right. Well, let's see. When did they win? 2005.
They won. When they win, Dan Long? 2000. I told your husband I'm a Cubs fan.
Yes. So they won 2005. So it was that year.
What year was it? 2005.
Yeah, yes.
Was it 2005?
2004.
Oh, you did your thing in 2004. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you celebrate community. I mean, I want to get to Wanda.
Yes.
Wanda's over there, but Writing Out Loud is kind of a celebration of all these people that you've connected with.
Yes. Absolutely. That's a nice way of saying it. Yes.
Yeah. And Wanda, how are you?
I'm great.
You're doing okay?
Yes.
And Wanda, you're in the book.
Yes.
I think Dan's going to help you with the microphone here. You're 95 years old.
Yes.
You're right? You went to DuSable.
Yes, I did.
What was it like? What was it like to go to DuSable back when you were there?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was my years at DuSable among my happiest years, and it was just a wonderful school. It was a new school, and we were on the first rung of adult, and we just felt that we had something going there because there was everything that you wanted to do was at DuSable. We had all kinds of classes, and we were free to take them.
How did you feel about it being, I think you said it was like a city within a city, or it was obviously bridged off because of segregation. How did you feel about that? It was before integration.
Well, you know, I think we were so used to segregation that we just accepted it because we had our neighborhood, we had our friends, and we had a city within a city.
Right.
47th Street, 43rd Street, 39th Street. Well, all of our businesses were there, and we hired our own, and we patronized our own, and we were family because we only had one school that we could go to freely, and so we gathered up. We started Cottage Grove, which was our boundary line, and we picked up friends as we went. And when we finally got to Wabash Avenue, we may have had a crowd of 16, and we were all just laughing and talking and going there. We all went to the same parties, and we shopped at the same stores. And
I bet people watched out for each other. People watched out for each other. It was
a
tightly knit.
Yes, yeah. Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Now I know a little bit. Actually, you know, when I went to DuSable a couple times on an exchange program back when I was a kid. But I knew a little bit about the history. Did you Nat King Cole? Did you know him?
I knew of him, but I knew Dinah Washington.
You did know Dinah Washington.
Fred Sanford.
Fred Sanford, who would be Red Fox?
Yes.
Was he? Was he? What was he like? Did you know him?
Well, he was a bowl of fun.
I guess he would be.
Because every year we had a show called Hijinks.
Yeah.
And you had to try out for Hijinks. And it was just really professionally produced. And that was something that kids and family, friends, people, everybody, the community looked forward to Hijinks every year. One year we put a Captain Diet, you probably...
Yeah, right, Walter Diet, yeah.
Yes, well, Captain Diet had six boys in full dress come out and stand on the stage. Then down from the ceiling came six girls in chiffon dresses, pastel colors. Each one had on a different color. And we were rolled down to the stage. Then the gentleman bowed. and we waltzed.
Oh, my goodness.
It was, if you saw Dream Girls, the original Dream
Girls.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
Okay, we did it before they did.
All right, we're going to take a break.
We were first.
We're going to take a break for some spots. This is great, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Soda and pretzels and beer.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. That's Wanda's friend, Nat King Cole. We're here with Wanda Bridgeforth and Beth Finke, author, teacher. And Wanda is in Beth's new memoir, Writing Out Loud, What a Blind Teacher Learned from Leading a Memoir Class for Seniors. And it's on Golden Alley Press, goldenalleypress.com. It's a wonderful book. It's very breezy. It's very conversational. I want to ask a little bit more on dynamics. Wanda?
Yes.
It's pretty interesting. You said, oh, we have somebody who can't see and somebody who can't hear. So, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Get a little closer to the mic.
Beth has developed her hearing, and I have developed my seeing.
The two of us sit right next to each other in class, so she'll tell me what's going on.
I see for her, and she hears for me. We're
a good team.
But I want to talk to you. Wanda, when you first met Beth, how did Beth bring you out? How were you able to share your stories with Beth when you first met her?
Oh, well,
could you do stuff like this together? You appear together.
I went to Beth's book signing for Long Time No See.
Yeah,
and
that was the first book.
I didn't know she was blind. So when I went up to get my book signed, and we started talking, and I just discovered Honey.
That's my seeing eye dog at the time.
That's when I discovered that she was blind. And I said to myself, holy Toledo. How in the Sam Hill is she going to teach writing?
But you did. It was.
I soon learned, and I have enjoyed. I've been in her class 11 years, and I just love it. It was my salvation because I had retired the second time, and I was just kind of at loose ends. What the heck am I going to do with my time? So my friend Minerva Bill said, invited me to her book signing, and I said, okay, great, this is it, and that's been in my way ever since.
So it was very inspirational for you.
Oh, yeah. She's very inspiring.
And conversely, Beth,
yes,
coming back at Wanda, I mean,
yes,
what was it like to meet her?
Oh, my. Her friend Minerva Bell also went to DeSable, so I knew Minerva was in my class already, and I figured any friend of Minerva is a friend of mine. But Wanda was a powerhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, she was going to be in. I said, well, you could visit on Monday. She said, I'm coming on Monday. I'm coming to class. I mean, she came to the next class. She's been in the class ever since. She's the star of the class, and the whole class knows that. And I should say, not everybody in the class has a disability. It's not like that. You know, one of the joys, I mean, there are some benefits to being blind, and one of my favorites is that I can't see what people look like. So I really do not think of the people as older. I don't know that some of them come in with canes. I guess I can hear them sometimes, but I don't know anything about that. So I just treat them like people my age and people that should, you know, that not they shouldn't do anything. They can do whatever they want. The biggest surprise to me was how social this is. It's a very, they learn writing. People that want to get better at writing, I can use my talking computer to help edit things. But most people just read their pieces out loud. Every single person reads their piece out loud. And by doing that week after week after week, you get to know the people in the class. And they might have started as strangers, but they really become friends, or you get to hear the stories and you figure out, well, you know, I'm not sure I like John's backstory. I'm not, but I might go and hang out with Julie. You know, you get to decide who you want to hang out with afterwards.
Yeah.
We're like family.
Yeah.
Same question for both of you guys. I want to go back to DeSable. When you talk about DeSable, when you talk about Bronzeville, a city within a city, Wanda, first, what do you see? What do you hear right now? I mean, these days, when you think about growing up,
what do I
What's your vision? What do you see about Bronzeville now, about you growing up there? Well, what's your memories?
It has changed drastically, but now it's beginning to come back. And we had my daughter and her husband bought a house at 44th and Michigan in the late 80s. And when I was a kid growing up, we used to look through the fence and see the parties that were being given in this yard. And it looks like we've come full circle, because in about 12 years ago, my grandson married in the same yard that we used to stand outside the fence.
Oh, really? Really?
So I said, isn't that poetic justice?
Uh-huh.
Or whatever. Because they rented out. There are two lots on the side of the house. And incidentally, the house was built by Governor Wentworth. So it's a historical thing, whatever.
And if I can butt in here for a second. Yeah. I also teach a class in Lincoln Park, and there was a woman in that class that was writing about how her uncle was Governor Wentworth, and they used to go to this house on 44th. And I was listening to her, and I thought, I think this is Wanda's daughter's house. And indeed, it is. So this woman from Lincoln Park, and Mike Judy Spock, you knew that that's the very house that Wanda in my other class. It's
wow.
Just fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that was. We got about 2 minutes left, but that's the same thing. Beth, what do you see? What's your vision when you hear her talk about Bronzeville and the South Side of Chicago?
Yeah. Well, pardon the pun, but it was an eye opener to have people from the South Side. When I started leading this class, I'd moved to Chicago a couple years before that, but I didn't really know. I knew what I heard in the news about the South Side. And then I'd go to White Sox Park and go, well, this is great. You know, what I learned a lot from all the writers in my classes,
sure.
But the experience in the South Side, I thought, before I met Minerva and Wanda, I thought, oh, how awful that it was segregated and they couldn't come out. And then I learned, you know, they had their own thing going there. It was a lot of fun. They had a community and they had same great lives that a lot of us had and really were quite a family.
Ownership is really important. I mean, it's for another segment, but I mean, I used to talk to Buck O'Neill and some of the Negro League players, and it was the same thing. It was like, hey, we own the teams, we own the hotels, and I mean, they had ownership.
Yeah.
That was our
neighborhood.
Yeah.
And like I said, they said that every black person knows every black person. Well, that was true in Bronzeville. Because there was nowhere to go.
Yeah.
We had our boundary lines. Our boundary line was 51st Street and 29th Street, Cottage Grove, and the railroad track.
Okay, well, we're about out of time, but I want to plug it again. I really recommend it. Writing Out Loud, What a Blind Teacher Learned from Leading a Memoir Class. You could do a movie out of this.
Yeah.
Memoir Class for Seniors by Beth Finke. Thanks so much for coming. I want to thank some people. I want to thank the caregiver. You were very helpful.
Daphne.
Daphne?
Yep.
Thank you very much. And we got to thank your husband,
Mike Knezovich, for getting us here. Thank you,
Mike. He's great, even though he's a White Sox fan. He's great.
Some of them are okay.
Yeah.